Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
After a half century together, 38 Special continues to bring a signature blast of Southern rock to over 100 cities a year. And at each and every show, thousands of audience members are amazed by the explosive power of the band's performance. Their countless gold and platinum album awards stand in testament to the endurance of a legendary powerhouse. With sales in excess of 20 million, most associate the band with their big hits. Hold On Loosely, Rockin' Into the Night, Caught Up in You, Fantasy Girl, If I'd Been the One, Back Where You Belong, Chain Lightning, Second Chance, and more. All timeless hits that remain a staple, immediately recognizable from their first opening chord and paving the way to their present-day tour. Music legend Don Barnes is one of the founding members of 38 Special, and they will be performing at the McHenry County Fairgrounds on Saturday, August 3rd. Don joins us to share his journey. Don, how are you?
Great. How you doing, Dave?
I am great. You know, I was looking this up. Your first time performing in Chicago with 38 Special was back in 1986, almost 40 years ago at Poplar Creek. And I know. And you are it was that long ago, for sure. And then, you know, you were no stranger to Chicago. I think you were here recording last summer with our pal Jim Peterick.
Absolutely, I was. Yeah, he's got two studios in his house. He's a busy guy. But, yeah, we're firing on all cylinders all these years later. You said half a century. I was like, wow, that's a, I think we started the band. We were like third grade. That's our story. We're going to stick with it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, and I think of the makeup of 38 Special, and many have been around such a long time with the band. You still like each other, so that makes touring so much easier, yeah. Doesn't it?
That's always a plus, right?
Yeah.
You got to be able to get along. No, we have a great time. We're all family. The crew, we're all family. We roll down the road. We're, you know, trade insults with each other and laugh, you know. But it's a great job to bring that kind of joy to people. We have an explosive set of all the hit songs through the years. And we see the instant reactions of people. You know, they're high-fiving each other, singing every word. My sound man told me, he said, sometimes you got to turn you up because they're singing louder than you are out there.
That's,
you know,
great.
But you see, some people have tears in their eyes. A song might remind them of something from their past. You know, they might have lost someone, you know. So it's a real ride, you know. It's a real emotional trip because we've been around so many years, MTV days and all that. We bang all those hits back against each other and just take them for a ride. We start with a big explosive opening and just keep climbing all the way, and it's about an hour and 40 minutes of everything you want to hear through the history of the band, even songs from movies. You know, we want to, you know, Back to Paradise from Revenge of the Nerds movie, you know, everything you want to hear from the band. And an hour and 40 minutes later, you know, they're all exhausted and we're exhausted along with them. It's more bang for the buck there, right, Dave?
I love it. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, when did you first get into music and the guitar, Don?
Well, I was very young. We, you know, all of us, now let me tell you, we were all young boys with a dream. You know, we were neighborhood guys. We made all our mistakes in public. that's the way the route goes. But, my dad was a music director at a Baptist church growing up. And so I had the early formations of music and cycles of fifths and things like that I learned. But, then I got a little older. We're playing little birthday parties and all that. And my dad would help me put my amp and my guitar in his trunk of his big Mercury and drive me to the little birthday party, pool party or whatever, you know. So it was always, we were more influenced by the British invasion, you know, the Animals, the Beatles. We were more melody oriented. We liked those kind of, radio friendly songs. Southern rock basically is it's a little linear. It's a lot of blues based, but, you know, we started doing that when we started out with 38 Special. Now, Donnie Van Zandt and myself had been through eight other bands before 38 Special. So we'd played all the teen dances and the clubs and this, you know, we came from Jacksonville, Florida, which is a Navy town. And so, everybody down there in Jacksonville, people wonder, was it in the water or something? It was with all of us, Dwayne Allman, Greg Allman, Ronnie Van Zandt, Skinner, Molly Hatch. We all played sailors clubs when we were 16 years old. So we played all the
Tom Petty, probably
the songs.
Yeah.
Petty was right down the road. Yeah. Outlaws were right down the road. So we all played the enlisted men's club. And so it afforded young guys at a young age to make $100 a week. You know, it's pretty big money for 16 years old. So we learned, we didn't realize at the time that we were learning all the foundations of songwriting and structures and things. So, we played all the Three Dog Night, Chicago and Blood, Sweat, and Tears and all those songs back to Young Rascals and all that. But you, as kids, you start learning where the payoff is in a song. You learn the actual graph of a song and the verse one, ramp up to the chorus, pre-chorus, bridge, all those kind of things. Then you start seeing where the cherry on top is, the big chorus, the thing that's a big hook, So that's when you get, after a few years of doing that, you get a little cocky and you think, well, I can write my own songs now. And that's when you go starve for the next 10 years.
Yeah, for sure.
Not something I recommend to the young guys,
It's interesting that your dad, was a music director for a Baptist church, because you think about Southern rock, you think about the blues, you think about the deep emotion and stories that come into that. And it's not always clear where someone's music influence was. And it sounds like outside of the British invasion, your dad probably paid a big role in that.
He did, absolutely. I lost him about 10 years ago, and he was my hero. And it's tough for me to talk about him because he was the one that believed in me. And I was married with a baby at 19, so I had day jobs. We all worked day jobs. It was not any easy road, but we would get off and pile into a car, go practice in a band, in some shack somewhere. And he saw me fail and never succeed anything. He'd ask me, son, when are you ever going to, make any money? But he drove a train for 40 years. He wanted me to be an engineer in the railroad.
Stable money.
And I said, Dad, I know it looks bad, but it's right around the corner. Maybe there's a big wide corner, but he ended up lining his den with gold and platinum albums all the way around awards. So he was so proud. I owe everything to him. I got to tell you a funny little, quick little story. We played the Memphis Coliseum. It was, sold out. It was New Year's Eve. They had indoor fireworks, all that, my dad and my uncle were there, and I told the lighting director, I said, hey, I want to just, just to show appreciation to him after all these years. I said, find out where my dad is sitting out there and, put a light on him when I mention his name. So about halfway through the show, it's packed, they're roaring. And I said, there's a special person here tonight. I just want to recognize. I said, my dad is here tonight. And that place went wild. I said, Dad, where are you? Stand up. And about six super trooper spotlights beamed down on his seat, and he stood up and, had a beer in his hand. He's toasting the crowd.
I love that. Wow.
I finally had, okay, sit down now, Dad.
That's great.
So he never forgot that, and that was my little homage to him, to thank him for all the years.
I love that. Great tribute. Yeah. What a great tribute. How initially, you're saying you're playing in the naval bases in Jacksonville. How did you, Donnie, Ken, and the rest of the guys first come together?
We were all in the same neighborhood. Leonard Skinner, Molly Hatchet. I mean, you could hit a 7-iron and hit about anybody that came from that area over there.
Yeah.
We had played in different bands, and we'd pick the guys that would, were committed. And Donnie called me. I was a landscape foreman. He called me and said, let's try it one more time. Like, oh no, really? Because you got to get people that are going to show up and commit, right. And so it's a lot of work. I mean, you have to be about 5 steps ahead of yourself. So, we picked the guys from other groups that were the strongest players, and we told them right away, this is our last chance. We're going to be committed to this. We're going to be rehearsing every night. We're going to be sacrificing holidays and birthdays, and we're going to be doing this. And so we needed to have that commitment to do that. And, So, you know, that's what started there. It became basically, like I said, the neighborhood. But and Skynyrd had just started taking off at the time. So they were proving that it could be done, even if you come from nowhereville like Jacksonville.
But
we weren't from New York or L.A. when the hit places, or Chicago. You know, Jim Peterick and I talk about all the, you know, all the greats from Chicago and the, you know, the Buckinghams and just every Ides of March, all that, you know.
Yeah.
And so we were big fans of those guys. But it was just one of those things, kind of osmosis. Everybody pooled together, and it's a brotherhood. It's still a celebration of that brotherhood. People come see the show, and they can tell that we have a good time with each other, and we're there to bring 110%. Nobody's ever staring at the shoes. You know, it's always a ride, and it's always fun and exciting. And so that's what it was all about with us. We wanted to be that, you know. We were
Beatles
fans, and
tell by your voice.
Later,
your enthusiasm. you seem like you're as enthused as you were 50 years ago.
It is 50 years later, you're still trying to be a Beatle, you know.
Okay, all right. Well, you're doing pretty well. You're doing pretty well.
Yeah. Did okay. We ended up selling 20 million records, but we starved for a long time. These young guys come along, they got a little band, you know, and they say they want to get a record deal. And I said, buddy, if you absolutely have to have it, that's one thing. But if you're doing it for the wrong reason, for the party and the girls or whatever, you know, you got to be a true artist. You got to learn the craft.
Well, it was Peter Rudge, I think, who was the manager for Skynyrd at the time. He handled the Who and the Stones. And he got you got you set up, I mean, to really get moving and opening up for, like, Foghat Kiss, Peter Frampton, and then you got signed to A&M.
Yeah.
I mean, A&M was the big deal, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, everybody wanted their token Southern rock band back then. It was kind of like the Seattle thing, you know, in the 90s. Everybody, you know, they wanted to have their own Southern rock. So that became why we were doing movies, music from movies and things. Because A&M had, A&M Records had a subsidiary, A&M Films. And they was like, you know, you guys want to do a rock song for teachers or whatever? Sure, you know. So we'd go in there 2 days, you know, knock out a song and go back on tour, you know. So, it was advantageous to us in hindsight. We didn't realize at the time. We were like, yeah, we'll knock it out. But, you know, it became part of our show, part of our history, you know. So, still trying to hit high notes 50 years later. You know?
right.
Yeah.
And the name 38 Special, I find this story to be interesting. I always like to know where the origins of a band come from, especially if it's not named after a lead singer. There's a great story behind this.
That is, band names, you know, because you actually do sit around a table and think about, you know, let's call it this. I mean, there's a few names out there. I don't know how they arrived at it, but ours was, like I said, we had to pile in a car and go rehearse at night after our day jobs. And, you know, the car had rust streaks and bald tires, you know, we're all piled in a car. And this was an old auto parts place that was north of Jacksonville. It was an area called Ocean Way, and it's really, you know, backwoods place. And it was this auto parts building had been condemned. There was no running water. It was electricity still there.
Yeah.
But we went out there because we had to leave our equipment, drums and amps and things. We had to leave it out there. So we had to fortify this building because, you know, when somebody break in and while we're, you know, 50 miles away. And so the front door, it fortified it with rebar and 2x4s. And but when we were done with that door, it looked like a vault door that's 2 feet thick, you know. So then we ran a tractor chain through the cinder block and through the door with a big lock on it. Well, after a period of time, we were so irresponsible, somebody lost the key to the big lock. So
whoops.
Then we had to, there was a window upstairs that we climbed up a little drain pipe ladder thing that the window looked like it was boarded up, but it was on hinges. And so we'd climb up on the top of the second story and push the window open and climb down and rehearse. And all our amps and drum, everything was up on grocery store pallets because it leaked so bad. The place was full of water half the time, but we had to keep the equipment up off the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we climbed down there and we rehearsed, and, you know, it'd be 4 or 5 hours a night and up to about 12 midnight or so. And so we were there for about 2 months, and the sound level of just decibels, 120 decibels and the sound pressure inside of a building. We stopped playing the song. We heard bullhorns and everybody shouting from outside that front door. And we you know, we were always alone out there, so it's kind of a scary thing.
Yeah.
And so I guess the cops and the constables around that area decided to make a raid on this place. I guess they thought it was wild parties or something, but they were yelling through the door. They want us to come out. And we yelled back through the door that we can't come out that door because we don't have a key to that lock. We can't open that lock. And one of the guys outside said he was like the old West days. He was going to shoot the lock off. He said, I got a 38 special and do the job here or something like that, you know, which is loosely related to that. And we didn't, you know, we climbed out and they knew that we were harmless out there, but we thought it was a pretty funny story. And we had the first gig down in Gainesville, Florida, and we didn't have a name for the band. And we said, well, that was pretty funny. Let's just call it 38 Special for now, and we'll come up with something better later. And we never did.
50 years later. I know. I love it.
It has kind of a rhythmic sound, 38 Special, da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, I love it. Love it.
Yeah.
We're talking to music legend Don Barnes of 38 Special, and there's more with Don next on 720 WGN. Day player 720 WGN. We're talking to rock legend Don Barnes of 38 Special. You know, first song to hit the charts was written by your pal, Jim Peterik, and I think that was Rockin' Into the Night, which he originally wrote for Survivor?
Yeah, they had, no one had heard of Survivor at the time either, and they were doing their first record, and they had this song, Rockin' Into the Night, was left off of the record because the producer didn't think it really fit them, their style, and you know, I kind of agree with it. It didn't seem like it fit them, but it was passed on to us through our manager from A&M Records, from John Klodner. He's the long-haired, long-bearded guy. He's kind of a titan in the industry. He's the one that got Aerosmith back together. Anyway, he was a friend of our manager's. He said, do you think these guys would be, you know, interested in... Well, that was our third album. See, that people think that it's an easy road once you get a record deal, but that just means you get a chance to play in the league.
Yeah,
you know, and you've got to... Yeah, and so you got to deliver. If you don't deliver, you're going to be sent back to the farm team, you know. So we had two albums that went straight over the cliff, Dave. So we were at a point where we were like, you know what? If they think this could be a hit song, sure, we'll give it a shot. If you get on their playlist in any big radio station, then you've got to prove yourself. So we had cracked the door at radio with Rockin' Into the Night, and we slammed that door open, kicked it open with Hold On Loosely, and it went all nationwide. And so we were off to the races then. So and after that, we just kept backing them up each time, Caught Up in You, and it just every song since then.
Caught Up in You, Back Where You Belong, Teacher, and I think that was written by Brian Adams for 38 Special for the film Teachers, because you talked about a lot of movies you were doing, but it was also the very beginning, you know, 1984. Hold On Loosely was 38 Special's first music video to hit MTV, and it was the 13th on the new network. How cool was that, and what did you think of the MTV at that time?
Yeah, we weren't quite ready for prime time at the time. We all looked like bridge trolls up there. All these other guys that had the cute factor and everything. We had hair down our chest, you know. But the MTV was brand new. No one had ever heard of it. And we were playing in Denver. And my manager said, you know, they got this new cable channel called MTV, Music Television. They would like to come out. And at the time, they didn't have any content. So they would send their own camera crews out to film live shows. Pat Benatar. But record companies weren't submitting videos to them because they were so, what's the word, nascent. And so he said, if you don't mind, they'd like to bring out a three-camera crew and film you guys. And I'm like, oh, well, whatever, sure. You know, so when they got out there, they had me, they said, would you do a little promo spot for the new station? And they held up a little card and I said, hi, this is Don Barnes, serious, but you're watching MTV. You'll never hear music the same way again. And I thought, what a weird little slogan, you know? And I thought, you know, I wish I'd have bought stock in it back then. So that was the first, it was 13th video, the very first day. And, you know, so we became, you know, a favorite of MTV. So we had a lot of videos. We weren't real actors. We pretty much just had performance videos. The one we did have, Back Where You Belong, we it was too expensive. We thought, no more of this acting stuff. We're just going to just bring the camera out and show us live, because that's our forte.
Well, and you know, at that time, you were selling to radio a lot, and obviously selling to music stores, and that was just another avenue, and just such a different avenue, because, again, the only time you would see a band perform, it was if you went and saw them in concert, and here you are now, and being replayed and replayed and replayed. That must have done a lot to kick the band up, too.
Absolutely. It was worldwide. I mean, we played probably 10 years after that. We played in Panama City, Panama, and it was a baseball stadium. I think Cheap Trick was opening for us or something. But we playing our set, and, you know, Teacher Teacher was a movie song, so it wasn't like a big high-charting song. So we got to Teacher Teacher, and the place went crazy. The whole baseball stadium singing every word. We're looking at each other. What'd we do?
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah.
So it just happened to be so huge down there, played on MTV so many times, you know, that they were all, it was like number one down there, you know. So we have enjoyed a lot of exposure from the MTV years.
Yeah,
they don't play music anymore.
No, they don't. I know. It's kind of sad, right? It's a reality crap. Right. You know, what about, you know, and I've read this about you, is that, you know, how most people hold a guitar pick and how they pluck, and you do the opposite. You do it with the rounded end for some of your songs, or maybe all of your songs. Talk about that.
Yeah. Jeff Carlisi and myself, and even the Skinner guys, they did the same thing. There were these, Mel Bay green picks, and they had a little gritty side where your finger is supposed to be holding it, so it keeps you from your finger and thumb slipping off of it. And so we discovered that if you turned it around on the round side, well, that gritty part of it grabs the string a little bit, and that was the trick with all our all that stuff was it's actually it's grabbing the strings and it's snagging on the string. So you know, it became a sound in its own, and people didn't realize. I still do it today. I still play that round side of the pick with the gritty side.
Love it. You know? That's very cool. All right, we're talking to Don Barnes of 38 Special, performing at the McHenry County Fairgrounds on Saturday, August 3rd. And there's more after the news next. Dave Plyer on 720 WGN, and we're talking to rock legend Don Barnes of 38 Special. So Wild-Eyed Southern Boys generated Hold On Loosely. Then came the fifth album with Caught Up In You. You had a story you wanted to share.
Yeah, like I said before, you have to be that many steps ahead of yourself, and songwriters have to have their antenna out all the time, because if you sit around and don't think too much about things, you'll never get material. You're trying to put your truth into music. We learned that from Ronnie Van Zant a long time ago. He said, try to put your own life and be honest, because people will relate to the truth. That can't be denied, the truth. And so if you can say, ooh, baby, I love you, I need you all day long. But, you know, if it's something that came from a real story, then it just rings true. So I was, we had done about 9 months on the road, and we were just scorched after 9 months. We were promoting the last album. And we got home, and everybody did their little week, 10-day vacations, and we were contractually obligated to have an album out in 6 months from then. I mean, it's like, once you get a record deal, you're under the gun there. You have to, you know, you have to have material written.
Well, if you're not on stage, if you're not on stage, you're writing songs and you're preparing the next album. It's just nonstop.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so we didn't have an idea of one single note. It was due 6 months from then. And I was dating this woman after the relationship previous was over. And I said, I just happened to say, you know, I just can't seem to get any work done. I'm just so caught up in you all the time. And it just rolled out just like that. And it was like a light bulb went on. And I thought, you know, that's a pretty good song title. It's happy. It's, you know, joyous. You can make a story around it. And so all those lines, I never did suspect a thing. I'm just so caught up in you. And, you know, brought it to Jim Peter. We always had the chemistry together.
And sounds like it. Yeah.
Put it together. Yeah, so just one after another, we were just banging these songs up. But again, like I said, it was just putting the truth in. People think, well, I felt just like that, you know.
Did a song ever come up before the title? Like, I mean, it seems like the title does drive a lot of the lyrics and the music itself. But did you? How many times have you written the song and then had to come up with the title later?
Songwriting is from the inside out. You people don't realize that, and they see it. They, when they hear it, they think, how clever, how did they get to that middle part? Well, it's because you're riding to a destination.
Got it.
So when you, I mean, of all people, Tom T. Hall said this many years ago. He said, if you're driving around aimlessly in a car with no destination, then you're just running the streets. You don't know where you're going.
True.
So songwriting is from riding to a target, riding to a destination. So there might be a previous rhyme that rhymes with that title, and people go, how'd they do that?
Right. Yeah.
You know, so it's written basically backwards like that. Yeah.
So what are your fans going to hear when you're on stage? I know it's all the hits, but you know, how do you put together and actually shake up the set list a little bit? You know, is it pretty standard for you what you do? I know probably what you open with, what you close with, but how do you kind of put everything together for the show itself?
We have revamped the show over the years, and we put little mini medleys of songs. There's so many songs could be there 3 or 4 hours. We couldn't play them all in full. So some of them are like little mini medleys of about 2 minutes of each one, and it bangs right into another hit song. And people are like, wow, I can't believe that was you guys that you did that song too. Yeah, you know, so it's a series of little medleys, and then we put some special things in there. The show is just really, like I said, it's a ride. It goes. We somewhere around the middle, we give the audience a little bit of a break, you know, with Second Chance, and I've got Jerry Riggs, who was he had a record deal back in the 80s, and he was the responsible for a lot of music on the movie Heavy Metal. You remember mm-hmm, Heavy Metal? Mm-hmm. And so. He's such a virtuoso. It's like having Jeff Beck on stage. This guy's like, I told him, Jerry, that stuff's not on my guitar. I don't know. I think I need an upgrade or something. But anyway, he dazzles this crowd. I just give him about two minutes or so to transform the whole arena into a completely different atmosphere. It's almost like Pink Floyd or something. But and the lights and everything and the keyboards, it's real mesmerizing. Everybody's standing up, standing ovation after he does that. And so then we bang right into If I'd Been the One, another hit, more hit songs, you know. But so we've learned to provide a little bit of emotion, a little different styles, but mainly it's everything. The nostalgia is a strong tug on the heart, you know, we've got some new songs too, and we've done some strong stuff that's been, you know, buried back in albums, and people are really surprised. We play Hearts on Fire, which is just big. We're always big fans of the big guitars and, you know, mm-hmm. in your face kind of. And even though we have the pop sensibilities, we still came from that strong guitar, you know, 50 feet high, you know, so yeah. We go out there. And so basically the show is we've gotten so experienced at finding out what works,
sure.
What moves people.
Of course.
And you just keep honing it until it's so blistering that people are just blown away by the end of it.
Well, I can't wait. You can catch 38 Special on stage at the McHenry County Fairgrounds Saturday, August 3rd. And for more on the band and what's going on with them, visit 38special.com. Don, I love your enthusiasm. I love your passion. This has been so much fun talking to you, and I can't wait to see you on the big tour.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Dave. I appreciate you having me on. And everybody make it out, because you're going to see a celebration of all the years and all the great songs and the emotions, and it will really move you. We're going to have a large time together, so I hope to see everyone.
All right, Don Barnes of 38 Special. All right, much more ahead here on 720 WGN.